So I could pay off my loans. I just haven't yet. And I couldn't really tell you why. Hello, and welcome to Financials Podcast, Future Rich. I'm your host, Barbara Ginty, and I'm also a CFP, which stands for a Certified Financial Planner. And I'm very excited to have my guest, Monique, on. Hi, Monique.
Hi.
Monique, you are a follow-up, which is always fun. I only do a handful of these a year, and you were originally on as episode 22, and we aired it back on February 8th of 2019.
Yes, things have changed since then.
Oh my God, it was pre-pandemic.
That it was,
which is wild. And we'll get into this, but you are in healthcare, so I'm sure I would like to hear how that was for you. But so for all of our lovely listeners, when Monique first came on, and you should absolutely check out episode 22, you were out of school about a year. You were a nurse practitioner, or probably still are a nurse practitioner, living in Philadelphia. You were making a salary of $120,000 gross. You had at the time, this is one of my favorite quotes from the episode, you had called it a tornado of debt. Actually, not the most debt I've seen in all these interviews since we have like 200 now. But you, at the time, you had about $19,000 in undergraduate loans and $19,000 in graduate loans. And one thing that had surprised you was you had incurred a bunch of debt on credit cards because you had kept your standard of living similar when you're in school, even though you were working while in school. So you had, at the time, $11,000 in credit card debt, so a grand total of around $50,000.
That's true.
That's true. Okay. And then we had some, we had financial goals that you wanted to work towards, like buying a house. And so I am very excited to get an update on, you know, life and your finances and all of that.
Thank you for having me back. I'm very, very excited to do this follow-up as we don't have a tornado of debt anymore.
Ooh, that's so exciting.
It is exciting.
So all debt's gone. No undergrad, no grad, no.
Oh, well, it's not a tornado.
Okay.
It's a little rainstorm.
Like a rainstorm. Okay, perfect. Yeah. So,
a summer rainstorm.
It's a cat one, not a cat five.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay, perfect. Okay, so fill me in. So are you still in Philadelphia?
I am not. I moved to New York City 2 months before the pandemic because timing is everything.
Oh no, New York City. Okay. I'm still a nurse practitioner.
I am, yes.
Okay.
I was in the intensive care unit during COVID. So that was a lot.
Yeah, that had to be so hard.
Yeah, it was very, very difficult.
Seen so many COVID patients.
So many COVID patients, yes.
Oh, gosh.
It was really scary. Yeah.
Front line.
Yes. Yes.
Gosh, oh my
gosh. Got COVID on April Fool's. It wasn't an April Fool's joke.
Oh, no.
Saw a lot of really, really sad cases. And luckily, that's behind us now and work isn't like that anymore. But it was very, very difficult going through it for sure.
Did you just want to quit?
Honestly, being new in the city and being new in the hospital, I made some incredible friends with my colleagues. So I feel like, I don't know if our relationship would have been as strong had we not been going through such a traumatic experience. Mm-hmm. But truly, like without them, I definitely would have quit probably. Yes.
But that experience has now bonded you because it's something that most people can't relate to, right? And you did it together. So exactly. You have that, that bond.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, man. I'm like speechless. I can't imagine. So when everybody was doing the pans and clapping in New York, they were clapping for you.
That was really amazing that people did that, honestly. It was really incredible. It was interesting because it was only on my days off that you would hear it. But
right, because otherwise you were in the ICU saving lives, right? So you weren't there to hear it.
But it was every single time. It was extremely moving. It was really, really incredible. And luckily, like the part of the city I live in is a lot of healthcare workers too. So it never felt like desolate, like other parts of the city
where
places kind
out.
Of stayed open. Yeah. Like, you know, you're walking to work, you're seeing other people doing the same. So
that
I give credit to people that were stuck at home, honestly, because I felt almost, even though what we were doing was obviously very intense, I felt bad for people that didn't have that experience of getting up and still going to work and like still talking and meeting with colleagues and things like that. So even though it's like a weird positive of it, it kind of kept life a little bit normal.
Yeah, you had that semblance of routine that a lot of people lost, exactly. That routine and structure. Now, I think this is a silly question. I'm just curious. So when you were there, you had to be like gowned up the whole time, right? So was it like hard to talk to your, I was curious. Was it hard to like communicate with your colleagues with all that gear on?
I mean, we had our masks on all the time and like goggles and then our caps. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the blowouts were really cut down during
the
pandemic.
You saved a lot of money on hair.
Because we were wearing our hair caps. I guess my voice got louder. That's not that hard to do. We were still talking.
Okay. So you didn't have to have like the whole, like you just had a, not that just, but now these days just a mask, but you didn't have to have like a face shield and like.
Well, like going in the rooms we did.
You did. Okay.
But not when we were like.
At the desk.
Amongst each other. Yeah.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. And how many times did you contract COVID working in the ICU? Just once?
Twice.
Twice. Okay. I was going to say one seems low if you're like around the time.
There were a couple of us that got it around the same time. And it was more of like the fear of the unknown that time, mm-hmm. you know, because you just didn't know what kind you were going to get. Yeah. And then the second time I got it was also pretty much when everyone had it around the holidays of last year.
Oh, I got it then. Uh-huh. I think everyone got it then. Yeah. I was like, Merry Christmas. You've tested positive.
Exactly. Have fun telling all your family that you ruined Christmas.
Yeah, that was the exact phrase my mother used. Was like, are you trying to ruin Christmas? I was like, no, I'm not. But I'm I'm positive, so I'm calling you from the guest bedroom because I'm not leaving the guest bedroom.
So scary.
Yeah, because I actually tested positive Christmas morning.
Okay, I was the day after.
Oh gosh, so you had to call everybody who was at Christmas to be like, hey guys.
Exactly. It was like, it still felt just as awkward as like the first time.
Yeah.
Like calling people I had been around.
I think that's the worst part of COVID is you get it and then you have to call everybody. I got it twice. The second time I was like the one that got called and told you were exposed. And so then I stayed away. Mm-hmm. But for the Christmas one, I was the only one who came down with it. So I had to call everybody that I had been around. And say I had it, although I had tested negative literally like 6 days prior, like six consecutive days prior. So then my doctor was like, you just have a sinus infection, which I did, was completely accurate. Just test every other day because I think it's just a sinus infection, not COVID. And so I waited less than 48 hours and retested and then it was positive. And I was like,
so terrible.
Now I have COVID and a sinus infection. But yeah, it's so awkward to call everyone and be like, so I had to call my sister who had hosted Christmas Eve on Christmas morning and be like, hi, so I think I might have exposed you and everybody in your house.
Oh my God. Oh, it is a really, really difficult phone call for sure.
Yeah. So gosh, hopefully we're like almost through it. Are you seeing, so you're, you know, in New York City now, we're still in intensive care?
No, I actually transitioned. This is my first job that's not in a critical environment and I'm absolutely thrilled. So
okay, so what's your
outpatient?
Oh, amazing.
Still a nurse practitioner, just outpatient. So I see patients before they have surgery and just make sure that they're healthy enough to go through with the surgery.
Amazing. So you're not in a critical care unit.
Exactly. Yeah. And it is interesting though, because everyone we test for COVID because you need to be tested before you go into the hospital.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's like I'll get like a handful of patients that I've seen that are positive. But I mean, we're still wearing all the garb PPE and everything.
Yeah.
So yeah, so it's you know, we're protected in that way, but it's definitely still out there. But I left the ICU in March and it was pretty rare that we would have patients that were that sick that they were in the ICU with it. Not that it doesn't happen, but it just not as severe as initially. Yeah.
So what do you think now, like heading into, we're recording this in November, so heading into the holiday season, you know, with Thanksgiving coming up, do you think we're going to see another spike like we did last year? Because like last year, this time, everybody was like back at football games. It was like COVID's over. And then it really surged around the holidays. And a lot of people came down with it around the holidays.
I mean, I think it's possible that it will, but I think the benefit is that there are so many people that are like vaccinated and boosted mm-hmm. now that the severity won't be as intense. So if it does go up, it won't be as much of a problem. No problem. If that makes any sense.
Yeah, it'll be more like you get sick and stay home and then that's it. Although,
yeah,
having also had it twice, I have zero desire to ever have this again. I would like to avoid it the rest of my life.
I know. Because it really does knock you out.
Yeah, and I ended up with long haul COVID. Which I don't know if I've talked about on the show. Oh, it's okay. I was never hospitalized, but ended up with like severe issues and it went on for 9 months. It was like miserable.
That is so scary. I've seen patients that have that. It's awful. I'm very sorry. Did you find someone that was able to like help you through it?
Yeah. So I ended up going out to the Cleveland Clinic to get
good.
Yeah. To get care. Cause I ended up with a chronic migraine condition. So I was getting daily migraines as a result of COVID.
Unbelievable. The neuro stuff that comes along with it is not as spoken of as the respiratory, but it's really real.
Yeah. So everyone, when I say long haul COVID, they were like, oh, were you like on a respirator? And I was like, no, I was in the neurological department. Yeah.
And migraines are awful.
They are awful. Yeah. They're pretty terrible. Yeah. But they said that, and I didn't know this until I got it, but they said that it causes, for some people, it causes more neurological problems. And, you know, some people lose their taste and smell, which is neurological. Yeah. And other people can end up with like a chronic headache. But mine were like actual migraine or a migraine issue. They're seeing a lot of it. But it's not talked about at all.
No, it's not. Yeah. It's really just like, I don't know that if I was outside of the medical field and actually talking to people that had it and asking them, you know what I mean? Like, it's like every patient I see, it's like, did you have COVID? Yay or nay? Yes. What were your symptoms? Do you still have any? So I have this conversation very, very often. But yeah, I think if I wasn't in this field and doing that, I wouldn't know about the neurologic side effects.
No, I didn't. I was assuming, was like, I Googled it and was like, oh, I'm dying. I have a brain tumor that has taken over my head and I need
something.
I'm going to die. And then when they ran all the tests and they're like, okay, so we have good news. And I was like, what is it? They're like, it's COVID. And I was like, what? And you're like, it's COVID. And I was like, okay. And I was like, so there's no brain tumor. And they're like, nope, like everything is normal. And so because you had COVID, it's, you know, a neurological side effect of having COVID. And I was like, okay, like, what does that mean? And they're like, so that means it'll go away. And I was like, when? And they're like, we don't know. It should at some point, you know, it could be 6 months, it could be 6 years. And at that point, I just started to cry. I was like, 6 years?
Oh, yeah.
They were just like, we don't know enough about it. And this is not something that happens to everybody. And so just, you know, they're studying it. It was 9 months for me. So. About.
It's a long time.
It is a really long time. Yeah, it is a long time.
Yeah.
But it did resolve, which was great. But yeah, it's really interesting because you don't hear about that side of it, that it can like stay in your body and cause like residual problems.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I'm sure listeners will be wondering, I was vaccinated and boosted. Like yep. I had all the thing. And that's what I said to the doctors. I was like, you guys said if I did everything.
But you just don't know.
Yeah. Like, yeah, I would be fine. And they're like, yeah, well, exactly. You're not dying. And I was like, oh, it feels like it though.
I mean, you did all the right things and maybe it could have been worse. So even though that was terrible, like at least, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I wasn't.
They're not wrong, but it's probably not what you wanted to hear.
Yeah. their doctor was like, it's okay. This is good news. And I was like, it isn't good news. He was like, it is.
Feel that way.
Yeah. He was a
compared
nice
to what they see, I'm sure. Yeah.
They're like, you're going to be fine. We're going to give you some migraine medicine. They put me on a bunch of stuff, like neurological drugs that you take daily that are aggressive. But they're like, we're going to put you on a bunch of stuff and we're going to get you out of pain. And then, you know, eventually you'll feel better. And I was like, okay. Yeah. But yeah, so COVID is no joke. Yes, I am too. I am very glad. I really wanted to go to like a top hospital because I really did think that there was something seriously wrong. Like I didn't think it was COVID. I never connected the dots that it would be COVID at all.
So scary. But going to like a specialized like place like that is definitely the right move for.
Yeah. And I got to see Cleveland. Had never been to Cleveland. So that was a bonus. I took my mom.
There you go.
Yeah.
Cleveland's that's nice.
Yeah. Cleveland's a great city. So, okay. Yeah. Anyway, I diverge. I'm very interested in, obviously very interested in COVID. Okay. So now you're an outpatient and then let's talk about the finances. So before you're making 120, what does your salary look like now?
I make around 150 now.
Oh, amazing. You went up almost $30,000.
Yes.
Incredible. And then where is this rainstorm of debt? Like, what are we at?
Okay. So no more credit cards at all.
Amazing.
That gets paid off constantly. And then I've been able to save a lot. So I could pay off my loans. I just haven't yet. And I couldn't really tell you why.
Well, do you qualify for any of the loan forgiveness?
So that's a really wonderful question. I logged on today.
Okay.
And
did you log on because we were going to be talking and you knew I might ask this?
It might have been the reason. It might have been on my to-do list since July. But, you know, I'm one of those people where I need a little bit of a light igniting push to get things going sometimes. So anywho, I have literally none of my loans from undergrad are even eligible, and it's literally $2,000. So I didn't even realize it was that low because they started sneaking, they like snuck up on me and made my monthly payment like barely anything. And I was like, that's weird, but naturally didn't look into it at all.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, why do I still have that? Like, I could pay that off right now. So that doesn't qualify.
Okay.
But my graduate school ones, I'm assuming will, because I have worked in hospitals that are eligible for the public service one.
Yeah.
It just hasn't been 10 years yet. So I don't know if it's worth it to just teeter along with them until I hit the 10-year mark.
Right.
So which would be like in 3 years for the, like, I basically took out a little chunk each of my years.
Yep.
Basically, I have like 14,000 left. So like I could also pay that.
So I think that there's an income limit of 125 for the forgiveness. Did you see that?
I think that's for Biden's thing. Does that also fall for the public service?
No, that's not for public service. Yeah, that's for the Biden loan forgiveness.
Yeah, I know I can't get that.
Okay, so you're not eligible. Because I'm like, are you getting married anytime soon? Because the marriage one is 250.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, we can put that out there. Anyone interested?
Yeah, anyone interested in getting married till we get some loan forgiveness? I would first make sure that those loans you still have would be eligible for loan cancellation, and then you could look for a marriage partner. Not just kidding. Just kidding, but just throwing it out there.
Okay,
so no credit cards and $14,000 left of student loans, of which will be forgiven because of your job. So you have 18, 19, 20, 21, 22. You're halfway there, right?
Right.
Yeah, okay.
So it's just a matter of do I do it or not? And I guess I'm kind of
like— I would do it.
Why not? Yeah, okay. All right.
I mean,
that's what I feel like. And also, like, I should have done this 5 years ago for my undergrads, but in typical fashion— procrastinated and now they're gone, which is fine. But I feel like it'd be nice to take advantage of it for the graduate.
Yeah, I would 100%. And you're making sure that you're qualifying your work every year.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. If I were you, that's the benefit of working in a public service role is that you're eligible for that program. And when it's forgiven, there's no tax, whatever is forgiven.
Okay.
So I don't see any reason to pay it off when you're 5 years away. And so I would just chip along at it, make whatever payment, because they do it based on income. They tell you what you have to pay. So I'd pay whatever they want you to pay. And then at the end of 5 years, there should be about, even if at the end of 5 years, I would assume a decent amount would be forgiven. I would think at least half, right?
I would hope so.
Because what are you paying monthly on it?
I'll take anything.
I'll take anything.
300.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. I would keep paying your 300 and just chuck along. Or truck along at that $300 a month number for the next 5 years, because then it's $300 a month, and there's interest on these. So
yeah,
so it's 3,600.
Like 5%.
5%. Yeah. So you're actually hold on.
I might be done with them, right? I don't know.
You will. Okay, so $300 a month times, and now is $300 a month the other $2,000 one too?
That's like 100.
Okay, so 300 a month just towards the 14,000. Okay, so then this is where the math is critical. So 300 a month times 12 months is 3,600 times 5 years. You'll pay 18,000.
So, oh, and then the interest would kick up a little. So maybe there'll be like a little bit left.
So there could be a little bit left.
So instead, I'd be paying less if I just paid it now than doing that.
Yeah, you would save yourself $4,000 if the lump sum payment is 14. And the payoff and you're going to have to pay $300 a month for the next 5 years, if it's exactly 5 years, right?
Yeah, I think, well, so, okay, maybe I have to look into it more, because if I started grad school in year 14, mm-hmm. then technically that little bit would be 2024, right?
Because you were working while you were in grad school, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But those loans, yeah, I think we need to look into it more, because your loan, yeah. it depends on your loan was dispersed.
Started to pay back.
I think it would be, yeah, when you started to pay it back. So it was dispersed yeah. for you to go to grad school. And then did you start paying it back immediately? Like, were you immediately paying with a qualified job?
That's a really good question. I'd have to look back on my, right, like, because, in that.
Because when did you get the loan and when did you start paying? Do you know when you started paying on the loan? I guess that's the
probably important. Like, yeah, that would be, I'd have to look back. I mean, I guess do you think like the loan people would be someone that I could call and ask these things?
Yes. I just wouldn't have high hopes, but you could.
Yes. Okay.
But I would find
like
out. Like any customer service. Set a low bar for the experience. I would find out how many years you actually have left on that, because that I think is going to determine whether or not you pay it off or keep it. If you're going to end up actually spending more of your money to get it forgiven, and I use air quotes, obviously right. you might get money forgiven. Maybe at the end of 5 years you get $2,000 forgiven, but you paid 18. Does that make sense? So if you just pay right. it off in full, you're saving yourself, like you're spending, you're saving yourself that $4,000 right. that is evasion.
And torture
of having of the paperwork yeah. every year and having to qualify. So I would find out, and I would let the numbers drive it.
Okay.
Right? So that makes sense. If they say to you, okay, you have 3 years left, right? And it's $3,600 a year, and you have 3 years left. Well, then that's $10,800. You're saving yourself at least, you know, 32. That makes sense.
Right.
When the number gets higher and you're actually going to spend more money to get it forgiven, then I would consider maybe paying it off.
Okay. And that's just like making a payment that's the full amount and calling it a day.
Yeah. And maybe I should have asked this question. Our next partner has a product I use literally every day. I started taking AG1 because these past few months I've been prioritizing my health as I've recovered from a nasty case of long haul COVID. I love that it takes the mental work out of getting my vitamins and supplements in, because with just one scoop of AG1, you're getting 75 high quality vitamins, minerals, whole food sourced ingredients, and probiotics. It's been super simple to incorporate into my morning routine because there's virtually no prep required and it tastes great. Plus, it's way cheaper than a fancy coffee habit. If you want to give it a try, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free 1 year supply of immune supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/futurerich. Again, that is athleticgreens.com/futurerich to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. So how much you have saved up at this point? Like, where are we with savings and 401k and that, or 403b and that stuff?
So like between what I saved during COVID, like on top of paying off my tornado.
Yes.
I have about 100,000 right now saved.
Oh, that's incredible.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's just sitting in a savings account, because that's what we should do with that kind of money.
It needs to be in a high yield savings account, or I'm going to lose my mind.
It's in a Chase savings account.
What is it making? Please tell me it's making something.
Probably like 2%, if even that. I really don't know.
Okay, so
finance is not my strength.
I know. You save lives, more important things. Okay, so you're going to do two things for me. You're going to find out when you started paying back your loans. I'm putting this down. Okay, so what date? So like how many years you have left for loan forgiveness? For loan forgiveness is what you have to find out. And then that number is going to drive the next thing. And the next thing is, and I have a feeling that because you have 100,000 saved up, you're probably better off just paying that off and being done with your loans. Because I do think you're going to end up spending more money waiting for the forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you just use the math, like if you're going to spend 18,000 and you can get rid of it for 14, probably want to get rid of it for 14 because you have the cash.
Right.
If you didn't have the cash, then we wouldn't do that.
Different story. Yeah.
Different story. But you would still have very comfortable amount of cash.
Yes.
Okay. And then my next question is, how are you doing with retirement?
Oh my God. So I kept, this is driving my father insane, but I think that it might not be the craziest idea, but you can tell me. My old job, my retirement there is almost $150,000.
Amazing.
And that is just sitting in their little account. And then I'm contributing at my new job and they match me. Maybe. So I did some of my research along with my loan things, and it seems like I'm not matching the most that I'm allowed for my age group.
Okay.
So I feel like I should probably be more aggressive. I contribute 5%.
Okay.
And then my job does 8%.
Oh, amazing. And you can get more, like you could contribute more and they would give you more, you think?
No, that it maxes at that. So they do 5% for everyone. And then they match 1-3% of whatever you do. So I'm maxed at what they'll.
Okay, so you give me. But you think you're doing not enough for you based on your age?
Yes, like it looks like the, what is it? 20,500 is the most that you could put into a 401 at my age.
Yes,
a year.
Yes.
So that would be around 13%. So
I say let's do it. Why are you not doing it?
Just not knowledgeable.
Basically. Oh, okay. Now, okay, so can you afford it? That'll be, I mean, I think you can't afford not to do it, but.
Right. Yes, I think I can. I mean, I'm also contributing, I put away $2,000 a month to savings.
Amazing. So I would say that you've done enough for savings, right? So okay. I would rather have you up your 401k, or is it yours is a 403b?
It's a 401k.
Okay, so I would rather see you up your 401k to 13% for a couple of reasons. One, because most people, when they retire, the largest asset they have is their IRA or their whatever they had from retirement, usually the biggest account. I've never had anyone say to me, I wish I did less. Never happened. I have not had one person be like, you know what? We saved too much for retirement. Literally never heard it. And I've met with thousands of people. Mm-hmm. Also, you're living in one of the most expensive cities in the world.
Yes.
So you were paying New York State tax, you're paying New York City tax, and you're paying Fed tax. So you'll save so much money by putting 13% of your pay in there.
It's ridiculous when it's I ridiculous. See how much of my paycheck goes to taxes. And then when I do my taxes and I get back like what I pay at J.Crew on a regular day.
Yeah.
I'm not even treating myself.
No. So like your federal, like just to throw out some like round numbers. Okay, so let's say your federal is like 20, your state is 5, your city, I don't even know, we'll make up 3. Oh, and then you pay FICA tax, which no one talks about, which is the Social Security and Medicare contribution that you make. That's 7.
It's insane. And
yeah. So like maybe you're losing 35 or 40%-ish.
It's literally when I look at the, what is it, net and gross, this is how terrible my finance knowledge is. Yeah. That difference is mind-boggling.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. So for that reason alone, because you're a high income earner and you're single and you're in a very expensive city, what I would be maxing it out, and I would be maxing it out pre-tax. I don't care what anyone says. You will probably not be. I hope that you're not paying state and city tax when you're retired. Hopefully you're just paying feds.
Okay.
And hopefully you're in a lower bracket. I mean, you could be wrong, but you could definitely use the tax savings today. So I would be upping it. And then whatever the difference is in your pay, instead of saving $2,000 a month, I would just save whatever's left over.
Okay. That makes sense. Like see what it looks like.
Yeah. See what it looks like. Cause then your budget really won't change, right? It's just the distribution of where the monies are going. So you're just going to be putting more money into retirement versus more money into cash. And you have a lot in cash.
Yeah.
And you'll still feels good to be adding it.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's what I would do. So I would definitely increase it to 13%, and then the difference would go into savings. I would potentially pay off your loans with the savings. And then what else is going on?
I just don't know what to do with that amount, like where to put it, where it's not just sitting, not really making more than it can. You know, I mean, it's not a great market. Like, I mean, my 401's been destroyed. So I guess I have a question, not destroyed, but not as good as it was.
Right.
But I guess I have time, but on my side.
But so I guess it's what options to invest, and then is it okay to have two different 401ks, or should they all be together?
So there's no right or wrong, no right or wrong for that. So okay. Some people like to aggregate it because it's easier for a management standpoint. Like you have one retirement account versus two, because right now you have two, just to make sure that like you're not having to check on two accounts, right? So if they can aggregate it, and sometimes they allow it, sometimes they don't, you can just move one over to the other.
Okay.
The only reason I would keep it with the old firm, if there was like a specific reason, like you had some sort of investment you couldn't get somewhere else, that would be one reason. Okay. Now, the technical righties or legal response is you can do three things. You can leave it, you can roll it over to an IRA. I think the third option they give is liquidate, but you don't want to do that. But you could also aggregate. I don't think they list that on one of the legal documents, but you can aggregate it, meaning you could take it with you to your new firm, or in your case, your new hospital. Okay. So that's more of a personal preference. I like the idea of not leaving stuff behind because people forget about it. They don't check it. They don't update beneficiaries, those sort of things. So I would say if I were you, I would do one of two things. I would either make it your own IRA, and then that's your IRA that you always funnel account your 401ks. So as you leave companies, if you keep moving around, you know, if you move around again, you have your like home base account where you just like, when you leave a company, you move it over. Or the other option is to aggregate it and move it to your existing hospital. So you just have one to worry about. So one set of investments and one set of beneficiaries.
Okay. That makes sense. I guess my dad has been saying, oh, it's like, you're not contributing to it, so it's not growing. But I'm kind of like, but it's in stock. The same amount.
So,
and I am contributing to a different one.
So you are still contributing to your retirement. It is nice when there is that engine of growth of actual contributions through payroll. So your existing one will grow more because you're dollar cost averaging, meaning you're contributing on a regular basis.
Okay.
The other one is still growing because it's invested, like you said. It's just not adding to it. Mm-hmm. And you can't add to it there. Don't work there anymore. So that's right. That's normal.
Right.
That's why I like either. My personal preference is either move it to an IRA that you then track, right? That's yours, not with the company name on it, and make sure that you're comfortable with the investments and beneficiaries. Or another really easy thing to do, which is a little bit of paperwork as well. All of this is paperwork. Is just move it to your existing company, in your case, hospital.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Does that make sense?
Yes. A lot of sense.
But I think your biggest opportunity is to increase that 401k and then figure out about the student loans, because you might actually save yourself money by paying them off.
Yeah. And it would feel good to not have.
It's very liberating to not have it.
Right. No more rain at all.
No more, no tornadoes, no rainstorms, none of that.
Exactly.
And then, and you'll still be saving cash, because then at that point, I think from there, the next steps for you are if you want to buy a place, right?
Yes.
And then the other.
I recently moved.
Okay.
And I was very tempted to purchase because New York City rent went from being, please, we're begging you to live here, to
crazy town.
LOL, what pandemic?
Right.
And you're crazy rent. Top dollar now. Yes.
Like rent prices I've never heard of. And I lived there for like 13 years, but the rent prices currently are astronomical.
Out of control. Completely out of control. So I was thinking, I'm like, it almost financially makes more sense to buy something and have a mortgage that's the same as this insane rent that you're asking. But it felt very rushed. And then I found a place that it's not much more than I was paying in my old place.
Oh, good.
So I opted to do that. And that was before Philadelphia doesn't have this game, as I call it, where you find an apartment by yourself at Zillow, you look at it by yourself, and then somehow pay a renter broker's fee for 15% of the year. I was like, what exactly do you feel like you did to deserve this fee?
So for people,
please don't take this apartment away from me.
For people who don't know, New York City is a gauntlet to find an apartment. So what are you paying in your rent? Just curious.
$21.50.
It's actually very reasonable. Yes. Where are you in Manhattan proper?
Yes, I'm in Yorkville.
That feels like a steal, I have to tell you. The rent prices I've been hearing are
correct.
Crazy. Okay, but you did have to pay a broker fee. And did you have to show, is it 40%, 40 times rent, 40 times rent, right?
Yes, I gave away a lot of documents to a complete stranger. Also, something doesn't happen in Philly. It's a very, very eye-opening experience.
I mentioned to someone the other day.
A lot of personal data.
Yeah, that you have to have 40 times rent. And they were like, 40 times rent? And I was like, yeah, it's insane. Otherwise, you need a cosigner if you don't have the income to substantiate that. Yeah,
the poor guy at the Chase Bank, when he was cutting my banker's checks, I was just on a rant. And he was like, well, ma'am, these are refundable. If you decide not to go through with it, good day.
You change your mind. It just feels like you hate this right now. You can come back here. All for the pleasure of living in Manhattan. Although I will say $21.50 for New York City and Manhattan is a great price. And I hopefully
it is a great apartment.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Exposed brick.
Beautiful.
Elevator.
For the time being, with interest rates being at high and real estate being high, I wouldn't buy at the moment. But you do have all that cash. Mm-hmm. So I would just keep adding to it. And then I guess the next thing you could do with some of the cash if you wanted to, and it might be a good time to do it since the market is down, as you mentioned, your 401k has been destroyed. It's on sale, really, is another way to look at it, is you could take, depending on what amount you feel comfortable with, you could take some of that cash, whether it's $25,000 or $30,000. I still believe in having cash on hand. I'm conservative in that regard. You could take some of that and invest it in the market while we're at a low. And I don't think the lows are done. You know, that's my personal opinion. I think we still have more lows to come. So I would first get the 401k upped. I would first figure out the student loans. And then from there, I'd figure out a number you were comfortable with. And I would, in your mind, to me, it would make sense. You would want to leave it in there for at least 2 years. You wouldn't want to have you wouldn't say, I actually do want to buy a place and I want to do it in 12 months, because that would not align with investing the money. So I think if you're you're okay not buying for a little bit until the housing market cools off, because I don't think rates are going to go down, but I think the prices of property will go down.
Yes. Like even when I got pre-approved for the mortgage, it was like 5 to 6. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, last time I was checking, it was 2 to 3. And they're like, well, this is a new ball game. So now I think it's even more than that, right?
Yeah, but it's like over 7.
The prices are not. Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. The prices are not going down. So it's not really.
Yeah. So I wouldn't buy at a high interest rate. And, you know, honestly, historically, 7 isn't high. If you look historically over like a 40-year period, it's very high compared to the fact that earlier this year, you could get a 3% mortgage.
Right.
But the real estate prices are high. So you're paying a premium. And I wouldn't pay a premium for real estate right now. What I would do is wait until the real estate market softens and you can get it more of a deal. And also wait to see what happens with the rates, because maybe they'll come down, not this year, not next year, but maybe they'll come down a little bit. Maybe you could go back to a 6. But if you also get a property that was marked down significantly, then 6 isn't as bad, right?
Right. That makes sense. Yeah.
And so from there, you could figure out what you're comfortable with. So maybe you leave, you know, after you pay off the loans, maybe you leave half of that or a little more than half. Maybe you take, you know, $35,000 and invest it and you leave the rest in cash and keep adding to it.
Okay. And then like, I probably could, I mean, yeah, just, and also I have like a per diem job that I work sometimes.
Ooh.
And that I was doing to just kind of just put away even, you know, like I was just very much on this saving journey, kind of with COVID, like how I wasn't spending as much. Mm-hmm. I was like, this is kind of nice to not have to, you know what I mean? Like be worrying, whatever. And I was like, and just watching the savings account go up and up, it was more of like, I was like, oh, this is fun.
Yeah. Let's it's really nice. Right.
Yeah. So, yeah.
And, like, and you know, the other thing is I always like to say this to people who live in New York City, you do not have to buy your first property in the city you live in. Like, where's your family?
Long Island. So not much.
Oh, not a great real estate market. Yeah. Not much better. Okay. Scratch that. Well, if you like to Philly, or you like, if there's like a resort town you like, you know, or something upstate, you could always look to buy there and you'll probably see the pricing come down there. And if you keep saving, maybe you find a place that you could buy with cash.
Yeah, that's true.
You know,
that seems to be a lot of the steals when I'm like dabbling on Zillow. I'm like, this is too good to be true. And then it's like cash only. I was like, there you go.
And that's why. Because like at what your salary is, especially when you get rid of your $300, if I'm assuming you pay off the loans and you get rid of that $300 and then the $100, $400, right? payment that's now gone that you're budgeted for, that just goes back into savings. You'll really bump that. So even with increasing the 401k, you will still continue to grow that savings. And so maybe you use, maybe you buy something in cash somewhere.
Yeah.
Find something for maybe 120. Scranton. Maybe Scranton. Right. And you get a deal and then you rent it. I mean, there's a lot of options. So I like to just tell people, like, keep your mind open. It doesn't have to be an apartment in the city. It might be. It might, you might decide, like, I'm going to continue to work at this hospital. I really like it. I'm going to look to buy. I would still urge you to wait till prices come down and we get a little more clarity around interest rates. But, you know, that all, you also still have a really good down payment for like a $700,000 purchase, right? That you still have,
right?
When you get up to that $150,000 level, you're giving yourself a lot of optionality.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's good advice. And thank you too, because I was listening to your podcast, like strictly the ones like with housing. Well, I listened to it anyway, but re-listening to like the housing ones, and it was very, very good advice. So I thank you for what you do.
Oh, yes, absolutely. You're welcome. This was wonderful. I'm so glad that you've gotten rid of the tornado and you're on the savings journey. This is quite impressive.
It is a real turnaround in 3 years.
It is a huge, it's a huge difference.
And I did buy a hair dryer, so we're doing less blowouts.
Amazing.
Not
yes,
none, but less. Yeah,
you had a lot of blowouts and a lot of Ubers, I believe.
Yes. And we're, I moved recently, so that kind of like rocked my commute, even though it was a block and a half. I somehow was like, this 5 minute difference of getting to the bus is affecting me in a serious way. So I was Ubering and I was like, so we can't go back to that 2019 road.
No.
So now we're, you know, readjusting and using the bus.
Okay, good. I like to hear
as one should.
Yes. Well, the bus will help you buy a house or property, whatever it might be, way sooner than Uber. Uber is like, that's your like luxury, you know?
Correct. And doing the end of month budgeting and seeing that amount, it's disturbing to say the least.
Yeah. You'd rather invest that amount like in shares of a company and like not just spending it, giving it to them.
Very good point.
Yeah. Well, this is incredible. I thank you for all the good work you did during COVID and continue to do in the healthcare field. So thank you for that. And I appreciate you sharing journey with us. I'm so impressed with what you've accomplished.
Thank you for letting me. And thank you for everything you taught me. Seriously, you were very judgment-free and very helpful while I was, spiraling in my tornado. So thank you.
Absolutely. That's what we're here for. And so for all our lovely listeners, you can check us out on Instagram for our most up-to-date information. And we are Future Rich Podcast. And if you like us, please rate and review us. We'd so appreciate that. And share us with all of your friends.